Oh, You Brave Soul. And that's going to be about the only thing that's familiar to our normal format here this evening for what we believe is episode maybe 7 of Byhards. This is what happens when one of the tryhards is away, either for work or family or travel, in this case, illness. Matt Hurley away from the cast tonight, and so it's just Sean and Brian hanging out. If you're not familiar with or you've never caught an episode of Byhards, we are the younger, slovenly, undisciplined brother of the Tryhards podcast, which is to say that we're not edited, we're not post-produced. There is none of the fanciness that goes with Tryhards that's going to be present here tonight. This is the old teletype news version of Rip and Read, and we're going to do the best that we can. I'm Sean Secrets. The guy laughing in the background is Brian Tibbetts. This is actually like the second or third time we've actually been on together today, whether it's been on the phone or whatever, and then the lead up tonight. So if we're a little bit goofy, please forgive us. And Brian's been drinking for a while, and I had an event earlier tonight that I had to start drinking at too, because it's just the nice sociable thing to do. So who knows where this is going to go tonight. Brian, let's get it started the same way we usually do. It seems appropriate for this moment. I know you've got something in the glass now that you've shoveled out 11 inches of snow, the silver medal of snowfall for Galesburg. How did you survive Snowmageddon, and what are you drinking to get you through?
How I survived Snowmageddon still remains to be seen. Maybe if I put together a battle of wits deck, you know, in the snow day that coming up tomorrow. That's kind of how I see Byhards anyway, Sean. You kind of said the slovenly younger brother. Maybe Byhards is like the battle of wits as opposed to the tuned legacy decks that we like to play.
The unsleeved battle of wits.
The unsleeved battle of wits. Just jam all those lands and cards in there together. I am drinking it's from a brewery called Marchese in California. It's a Zinfandel. Had a little bit of pasta with the daughters tonight, and this fared very, very well with it. And I didn't open the bottle until I got the phone call saying, oh, another snow day tomorrow. Streets are terrible. And I said, great, let's just pop the cork on that one and get to drinking as we make the sauce. So as we make the gravy, as Tony Soprano would like to say. So that's what I'm drinking tonight. What are you imbibing in the cold nethers of Quincy, Illinois?
I've got something you're going to love, but you threw me for a loop because you said brewery in California. And I went, oh, wait a minute, he's just been drinking winery. So that's fine.
Actually, they know what they're doing as opposed to me playing magic or otherwise. But no, it's a winery, actually, not a brewery out there.
You may have had this before. It's from Four Hands down in St. Louis that we both love. It's their Absence of Light series. I got the peanut butter chocolate milk stout.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's so perfect.
As soon as I was at the function I had to be at earlier tonight, and then that's when Matt let us know he wasn't going to make it. And I thought, if we're just doing Byhards, I'm going to the liquor store. We're getting something else because I can just like drink and not edit it out. And, you know, you might hear me like taking a drink out of the glass, and it'll all be included tonight, warts and all. Here on Byhards. That's what we're drinking. We hope you've got something fantastic. Should we even do a magic that we played this week? You know what? We should, because we tried to play this afternoon on your snow day by testing one of the new features on Arena, the direct challenge mode. Well, Mr. Newbie Noob Monster, who's on this podcast with me, is apparently still rolling with his training wheels on. And when you do that, you can't challenge somebody who's in that mode. Did you get the laptop figured out? Like, where are you at on this? Because
yes,
this has been a lot
yes.
of fun.
Okay, so here's my deal. I had issues with the laptop for work. I had programs that I needed for school that weren't running. It weren't allowing me to run the programs I needed for school. So I had to uninstall Arena. And this is when Arena was kind of going through all of its growing pains.
Yeah, you know, we're still in closed beta at this point.
It was closed beta. It was, you know, it was pooping all over itself. It was throwing up on itself. It was having those beautiful moments. It was learning to walk. we took a bunch of photos, all that fun stuff. And then they, you know, wiped everybody's account, and then beta took off, and it's just been going gangbusters. Well, I missed all that. And so I reinstalled the software on this computer, which I don't use anymore. I got a different work computer. And so it's not the greatest hardware-wise. So I have it up and running, And I think I just need to win a match, and then I will have unlocked the arena play mode.
Win a match against the AI.
Oh, stop. I just got to win. Hey, I got mana screwed. Otherwise, it would have been unlocked already. So by this time tomorrow, when I'm on my snow day and Sean and I try this direct challenge thing again, I guarantee you that I will have unlocked this. And if I don't, then, yeah, you can make fun of me. Just like we make fun of Harley for stuff.
Right.
So,
and yeah. I was totally going to take it easy. Like, I went through my decks, and I'm like, yeah, that one's still pretty close to the base model. Like, I made a couple upgrades to the land, or, you know, this one will be fair to... No, tomorrow I'm just going to roll out, like, two, like, top-level standard decks against you if you...
Yeah, that's what I deserve. Figured out. So question about this, though. Can you... Like, you've got... I've got the stuff in my collection, and then can you just... Can you just edit any of those pre-con decks that they give you?
Yep. You just go through and delete this card and add one more of this or drag this in. Or on the deck screen, you can just delete the whole deck and then you click build new deck and just build it from scratch. But yeah, that's, I think, one of the best things they did was make those completely editable. Now, there's been some sort of pissing and moaning because it's not the most detailed interface. I think it's fine. Is it great? No. But it's more than serviceable.
Yeah, no, it seemed everything so far on this as kind of like the arena newbie and as the old man trying to learn arena, this seems totally accessible. And I feel like once I play around with it a little bit more, especially now that I'm going to have a lot of time tomorrow, this seems like it's a really, really good interface. And it was still giving me the $4.99 kind of value pack, which everybody was just, you know, kind of the arena version of Black Friday. Mm-hmm. Everybody was like stumbling over themselves to do this before it ran out of time. Well, guess what? They've let this go indefinitely, which is great. So for $5, you get to open like five packs and you get a couple other things. So yeah, so that looks good. So I'm looking forward to kind of sitting down and maybe putting something together that's not just kind of draft fodder for Sean's play testing tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. And if not, we'll boot up some Legacy, right? Because I know you love playing against that blue-white helm deck.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing, too, is I've got some time tomorrow, and I've threatened you to proxy is no longer the acceptable word, create a playtest version of some of the more outrageous decks that we've talked about, and you never know. So I may have some time tomorrow.
Ooh, that would be sweet. Yeah, do that. And I have no working printer at home, so I'm not going to be able to do that. I don't have enough cards to, like, write over. Otherwise, I'm going to grab some $50 card.
You don't have enough cards to write over? You don't have, like, oodles of basic land somewhere?
No, I do. Okay. Maybe I just don't want to take the time to do it.
That could be it, too. So, yes, one way or another, we're going to play on Tuesday, whether it's on Arena or whether it's over Skype, which is the old man physical card testing mode.
So that is use. The magic that we played this week. Unless, Sean, you got some in over the weekend, but I didn't think so over the holiday.
The basketball schedule was just murderous this week. And then you throw the holidays in there, and you've got all that going on, too. The best thing that I did over the holiday weekend, and this has become a tradition with another couple that we're friends with, is we start Thanksgiving Day. We used to run in, like, the turkey run here for our local YMCA. But 6 years in a row, it was 25 degrees or below, and we're all getting old. So we just gave that shit up. And now we just open a bar at like 9:30 that day and drink all the Bloody Marys we can until somebody has to be at a family member's house, usually at like noon. So, yeah,
that is amazing. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was like a go-to thing that you're doing. That's fantastic. It's
been like 4 years in a row. This is what we do.
I'm more proud of you for getting up and doing like the turkey trot, but at the same time, I gotta like tip of the cap and give you the little two-fingered salute for the Bloody Mary binge on Thanksgiving. So there is it the same bar every year? Do they do like a Bloody Mary bar or something?
It is the same bar each year, and we have kind of an inn. They're open and anybody can go. But Lori, the girlfriend's, her former sister-in-law, the bartender there, was married to her younger brother years ago. And so she really welcomes us and everything. And it's very much a neighborhood spot. And you go in, and for everybody who doesn't have somewhere to go, they do like a carry-in potluck. So if you don't have somewhere to go for Thanksgiving, people come in there and it's a feast, as you can imagine, you know, and you're obviously awesome. Drinking at the bar, and this, you know, the Bears game is on. So, you know, we're in Illinois, that's a big deal. So there were a lot of, you know, the Missouri people were happy this year because Trubisky was out. So Chase Daniel, the former Mizzou standout, won the game from the quarterback spot for the Bears. And it was cats laying with dogs, and it was, it was a good time. It was a good time. But yeah, that's kind of what we do. So no magic played, but a lot of fun had. Usually here we would do the Patreon raffle if this were tryhards and not buyhards. We are going to do the Patreon raffle next week. We've got that signed tryhards playmat that we'll be taking the raffle for. Follow at the tryhards on Twitter. Matt has how you register if you're not a patron on Twitter. You've got a little phrase that you just shout back at us, and then you'll be in for the raffle, and you could win. In fact, we had a Twitter follower win last time we did a raffle. So that
absolutely.
Was,
and if you entered thinking you were going to draw your name tonight, rest assured, you're still in for mm-hmm. the raffle on the playmat. You just be joining two other people who may jump on this a little bit more between then.
If you entered, since Matt shouted that out, thinking we were going to draw tonight, we're just going to keep all those. It's not going to be a new one for next week. So it's just an open, what do they call that for insurance now? Open rolling entry or something like that?
Yes.
See, now you know I'm old because I'm using insurance sign up language. And it's just life has taken a turn for the dull. And that's one of your reference points. speaking of things that aren't dull, magic in Poland. Apparently, we've seen shrinking numbers at events really around the globe this year, including North America, which North America, sort of Western Europe and the Pacific Rim have for a long time been the hotspots as far as attendance goes. It makes sense. You've got a high population concentration in those areas. But Poland outdid itself again this weekend for GP Warsaw. It was limited. 1,836 players.
What?
Came out to do this. 81 of them went home with 0 points. That's
that's such a tryhard stat right there. It's so great.
You know, part of me feels like a real you know what for mentioning that, but it's kind of our thing, and part of it is to laugh at ourselves because we've all done it before.
Yes,
but
it was sealed too, right? So
it limited. So sealed on day one, and then drafts on day two.
Oh God, that's just hard because you can just get crappy sealed pools, as we've seen when we were in Minneapolis. But then also playing comes into that, and anyway.
Well, the guy who had an inside track, and I'm not trying to start any rumors, but he's the pro player advisor for Wizards and is on the GP coverage. So maybe the inside track, Eduardo Sagulik took it all down. Did you see the picture that he tweeted with his sealed pool on day one?
Oh, God, yes.
2 Underrealm Liches and 2 Izoni Thousand-Eyed? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know. My 6-year-old, if she wasn't jumping on my back, might have been able to day two with that deck. So, but that was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
It's always fun to see something like that not go to waste. You know, when you see like somebody open a sealed pool like that, and it's not the person who went like 0-3 drop and then showed it to their friends and was like, how did you not do something with this? So, that was pretty sweet. So, no, congratulations to Eduardo. I'm liking his coverage more and more. Sean, I know you're kind of the critic on the the media front, the commentary and everything like that. You're hypercritical of that because that's your bailiwick. But I feel like Sagulik didn't really start out the strongest, but I feel like he's gotten so much stronger and he plays well off of whoever he's with. Usually it's Riley Knight, but I feel like he's a good, solid person to have in the booth now. And for that, I'm grateful.
Yeah, he was somebody that you can tell it doesn't come naturally for, and he was sort of the latest ingredient that was added. You look at the other players in that game regularly, Rich Hagen, BDM, LSV. These are players who have all grown with Magic over the years. Sagulik, great player, obviously, but he gets thrown into the modern version of it without much of that background, and he's in the communications realm. I think he works as a consultant in that realm, but it's much different, and you have to, and most people sort of take this for granted, but making sure that personalities and rhythms jive on the air. I worked with a guy about 8 years ago who was who was known as the isosceles triangle. He was idiosyncratic. He was asymmetrical. And those people are hard to work with because their natural rhythm is almost asyncopation. And you're like, well, wait a minute. You know, there's a famous thing in the music world where they call it singing in the pocket of the music and the song. And Willie Nelson was famous for never, ever singing in the pocket once. But it worked for him and his voice and in his style. He was more of a storyteller when it came to songs than just a straight frontman singer. And so you have to find a way to kind of blend all these things together. And Sajulik, you're right. I'm not going to say he started rough. He just started by trying to feel his way, and he's blended in very well. And I think he does a very nice job. And let's be honest, when you're talking about it, we get to detour on these things on ByHards. That's what's the lovely part of ByHards. When you're looking at the roster of commentators that you have to work with on a GP, because you have, if you're familiar with sports at all, there are play-by-play people and there are color people. And when it comes to Magic, your play-by-play people are your Marshall Sutcliffe's, they're your Riley Knights, they're your Rich Hagans, they're your Tim Willoughby's. And the other players are your color people, Reed Duke, LSV, so on and so forth. Sajulik fits in that role. He's there for his expertise. He's there to add his thoughts. He's there to add color. He's not there to run the broadcast. And trying to go from match to match and at one point be paired with the toned-down British stylings of Tim Willoughby and then the drunken brass band that is Riley Knight, and I love him.
That's such a good way to put it, but you're right.
That is just extremely hard, even for a longtime professional who's done that. And you get somebody in there who hasn't worked with those personalities, and you could tell there was a chance to kind of find your footing. Some people's own style are a little bit sets them apart. Reed Duke kind of has that, aw shucks, I'm just here to give you my opinion style. So he doesn't play off of the lead play-by-play man's personality as much as somebody like Sajulik, like an LSV. But then you have people who are their own brand already, like an LSV, like a Brian David Marshall, Rich Hagan. He's really kind of taken that news desk thing as his own. But now you see he and Maria Bertoldi, and they have a different interaction piece. So I give Eduardo and anybody who starts sort of in the middle of this a whole lot of credit if they can adapt quickly. I don't care how you start the first time. Can you adapt quickly over the course of 6-8 outings? They always say with like a TV series, you can't judge it until it gets to episode 6. Well, mm-hmm. I'm kind of the same mindset when they bring new people on to do coverage, whether it's in the lead role or whether it's as the analyst slash color person.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with that. And I think that's very, very true. He has been able to blend. And it's still great, though, to see him do well at the game that he's really, really good at, mm-hmm. you know, because he's still a professional player. But it's awesome that he can now bring that back to the booth and talk about that. And I'm sure Riley will give him endless crap for his win and probably talk about that. Tim Willoughby will probably just graciously, you know, give him the aw shucks, I'm in the presence of the master kind of thing, you know. But that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice that he gets to go out on a high note for his next event, which is coming up here pretty soon, correct? GP coming up
This weekend is Shinsuoka. I don't know if he's going, but that's the combined Legacy GP and Standard GP.
That's right. Oh, God, that's fun. I cannot wait for Legacy GP. Okay, so let's talk about that. We are planning on kind of a tryhards outing, let's say, for 2019.
I can't make plans to go to Shinsuoka. I've got stuff coming up this week.
Oh, really? Shoot. I already booked your ticket, so.
Well, I know you've got 14 snow days in a row. After Snowmageddon this week, you've got enough snow days. You could go to Shinsuoka and come back.
Hey, you know, kids aren't going to want to do anything anyway, so I'll just be like, yeah, see you guys. I'm going to Japan. I got nothing else to do, right? Just moving. No worries. But anyway, I'm going to say that we are planning a tryhards outing closer to my new digs in Appleton, Wisconsin, coming up here in about a month. Yikes! But there is a Magic Fest, not a GP anymore, a Magic Fest, mm-hmm. coming up in Madison, Wisconsin in May, and they have not yet announced the format. They haven't announced anything for April or May, but I don't know if it was you or if it was Hurley who just kind of called it and said it's got to be Legacy.
No, that was me. Yeah.
Now, are you just hoping beyond hope that it's Legacy, or do you
No, the exact text, the exact text I sent out to the group was, well, they haven't told us what the format is, so until they tell us otherwise, I'm going to prepare for Legacy.
Because
that's,
I love
that's
it.
What I hope I it's going to be. It'll probably be standard, which, you know, I won't be actually that upset, because the standard that we'll have will be the next iterations of the new Return to Ravnica. And it's been really interesting so far. And even though it's about a six deck format, by the time we get the other guilds involved in January and then a chance for it to marinate from there, I think things will be more wide open than ever. So for once, I won't be hugely disappointed if it's not Legacy. So if it's standard, all right. If it's sealed, we're going to have a talk with ourselves about doing two sealed events in a row.
Yes, this is exactly
with,
right.
With the are. Way that went down. And so that only leaves me Modern to be disappointed by. And I may just decide to give the middle finger to the format and do something like swallow my pride and play Bogles or something. Just to,
oh, God,
just
that, I would love to see you do that. Or just kind of say, okay, what deck, Hurley, what deck are you playing? Tibbetts, what deck are you playing? Fine. Give me all the other cards that you're not using that are, I can throw something together with, and boom, we got you.
Now watch this. This is the only, well, and on the show last week, I did mention that I'd been thinking about, with the reprint of Goryeo's Vengeance, putting Grishol brand together. And if it was announced as Modern, that's probably what I would do and just have an awful time doing that. I would enjoy myself.
Oh, you would enjoy yourself.
And I would probably go like 3-4 and drop. But here's what we're talking about all this. Watch, it's going to be a team GP. And we're going to have to go through that again. And by again, I mean assigning who plays what format.
I don't know if I can take the stress of just Hurley hemming and hawing. I think I'm going to have to make you just honorary team captain. And you're just going to have to be like, okay, you do this, I do this, and you do this, done.
Well, but see, if we've done it the way we've outlined it in the past, I've had the privilege of being picked to play Legacy, which means you two have to sit by each other because I'm on the one end of the table.
That's true. So maybe, well, maybe that's fine. Maybe that's fine. If Hurley keeps running with Standard the way he's running, mm-hmm. then great. He can do that. I understand he's going to the Invitational with Modern, but, you know, come January 1, it's kind of like my mind gets erased. I won't even remember that happened. Mm-hmm. If he starts to, you know, reference it, I'll be like, huh? When was that? You didn't do that.
We'll see. We're waiting to see how the Magic Fest Milwaukee ends up being announced. That's not until May. We'll be talking about a bunch of other stuff before that.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, just to circle back, I hope that it's remembered that Eduardo Sadulic won GP Warsaw, and GP Warsaw isn't remembered for the DQ in the top 8.
God, that was brutal. But okay, I didn't see. I read about it. I read Wizard's mm-hmm. post about it, but I didn't. Did you actually see
only the clip? I didn't see it in real time. Only the clip. So Christian Siebold is playing Julian Berteau. Berteau was eventually going to go on to become the finalist that Sadulic beat to win the title. They were obviously in draft at this point, but he got a DQ from the judge, Siebold did, for representing a game state, or rather I should say misrepresenting the game state in order to gain an advantage. What he did was he acted as if Berteau's spell was going to resolve, got a little bit more information, and then tried to do the old rewind the clocksies, takesies, backsies, counterspell.
Yeah, and that's fascinating to me because part of me is trying to think of how do you do that? Like, oh, you kind of say, isn't it kind of a yes or no, it resolves or it doesn't resolve? Or maybe at that level, at that stage of the game when you're in the top 8 and you've been playing all day, maybe it's just not as clear as it normally is because mm-hmm. usually it's kind of like it resolves or sure. Some very, very clear, yeah. Not a sure, whoa, wait, hold on. Yeah. Oh, I changed my mind, because obviously that's a clear misrepresentation. So man, basically if you tried to do that, that's ballsy.
I was going to say, so basically what I do to you all the time, like, oh, yeah, you got no.
Yeah, right. Well, when we do that on Skype and stuff, I'm kind of like, you know, trying to keep the 6-year-old from biting my ankle. And I'm like, wait, oh, I didn't hear you. And I can just claim that all the time.
Right. Well, and half the time when we do those things, we're we're researching for an event and we're essentially often playing like hands up, trying to just make best decisions. So
we're doing something
a little different than you are at a GP top eight, you know, at that point.
I just can't, you're under the lights,
like all eyes are on you.
Yeah. How do you think that this is going to actually fly past the judge and to just take like, boom, just DQ, not game loss. No, this was DQ. That's pretty serious to just kind of jump to that.
That's what they did. Siebold out. No worried yet on if it's going to be any follow-up punishment for him. You know, if this were the NFL, you'd get like a FedEx envelope on Tuesday after you got a flag for like a late hit, and they tell you how much of a fine you were getting, and they were taken from your next game check. So
exactly.
We'll see if Wizards send Siebold anything. It lets him know there's going to be a future levying of it, either his time or anything else along the way. That was the Magic this week, and that was literally it because it was Thanksgiving weekend in the States. Just the GP Warsaw with Limited. That leads me back to this topic. When we were talking about playing Limited, a week ago on the cast, we were talking about Ultimate Masters. This is going to be the last Masters set for a while. You said, Brian, the Shark Tank was thinking about doing the draft for your Christmas party. I've got like three or four guys here. We're going to go in on a box and do a draft together. Have you guys like made that plan? Is Ultimate Masters taking off there? Because the word's been kind of mum around my local Magic circle about Ultimate Masters.
The word's been a little mum here, other than people who are kind of losing their minds over some of the artwork like we were.
Mm-hmm.
But for our holiday party, we have decided to do the unstable draft just like we did last year. Because A, it's a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
B, you're not going to have that kind of competitive edge of, oh God, who's going to win the box topper? Who's going to win the box topper? Which I can appreciate in this time of year when people are, you know, just getting together to hang out, have some drinks, have some food, you know, be among friends and kind of do our gift exchange. I really like kind of the low key, hey, it's an unstable box. You know, somebody's going to open a foil land. Awesome. That's great. But for everybody to put in, I think it was like $17. The Ultimate Masters would have been a little bit more than that. So we've decided to do that. I do know that there are some people who are planning on getting a box or two just for the box toppers and then maybe, you know, holding on to do some crazy things with the packs or drafting and, you know, something at a later date. So, it hasn't taken off as much as I would have thought. And people are, you know, kind of losing their minds. But maybe leading up to the release this Friday, that's going to be, you know, what makes it and what's puts people over the edge. And it is the holiday season, so maybe people are going to be in that buying frenzy and just deciding, hey, I need a little something for myself. Bam. Let's go buy one.
Well, I mean, certainly Wizards and Hasbro's fourth quarter budget hopes that people are in that buying frenzy.
Exactly.
But this isn't a product, and we talked about this before. One of the issues with, like, the fat packs, the old school fat packs, and that price point, you could do that without worrying too much about it for a family member, a name that you drew out of the, you know, you got your nephew on the gift exchange drawn out of the hat at Thanksgiving. You know, you can spend that money, $30 or whatever. Nobody's getting a box of Ultimate Masters and being like, you know what? Little Kevin deserves some Magic cards. I mean,
that is exactly right.
So it's, and I understand they're intended for two different audiences. One's a mass consumption product and one's a luxury item. I certainly understand that. But I also have a feeling that this isn't as short printed, I guess, as we were sort of led to believe. I'm not saying this is going to be a print to demand issue like Conspiracy at all. But Brian, there's something that's telling me there's more of this out there than we're kind of being led to believe right now.
Oh, I definitely think that, because I think what Wizards is probably doing is, you know, with all of the reveals of the artwork, which, as we've admitted, is phenomenal. And to draw people into that box topper promo, you've got to buy the box. So maybe taking advantage of people's, you know, weakness. Hey, we're going to go in, draft it. Who winner gets box topper, whatever. The shop can do something like that, et cetera. You know, you're trying to take advantage to move all of that product. And I think they're trying to create this kind of like buying frenzy where they get to sell more product and more product. And yeah, I think they're going to have a lot of it on hand. If they went in with a different take on it, I think it would be a higher price point. So this one allows you to have the best of both worlds. It's not outrageously marketed to the point where you have to, you know, be, you know, somebody who's got that disposable income, kind of like with the Mythic set in a way. This gives you a lot of product for a good amount of money, just like the other Masters set. So yeah, I'm guessing they've printed a lot more of this than they're leading us to think. What happens if it kind of fails? Well, not much, because I can't imagine it costs a whole lot to print these cards.
And that's the thing that a lot of people don't get, is the cost for Wizards to make a set is the same like every time they print it. It's just like, how many copies do you want? They're the printer, it's not Cartamundi anymore. I'm just betrayed how old I am. they just snag some ink and slap it on some, you know, cardboard that's got a blue stripe down the middle of it.
Exactly. So and so, you know, it's not like, oh, we're going to go reprint Legends. Oh, boy, that's going to be pricey to reprint. No, it's not that. It's just cardboard. And make sure, what crappy foiling process are we going to use on this one?
Wait a minute, Brian. Reprint Legends. Are you arguing for the destruction of the reserve list and just chaos raining down?
Kind of. Sometimes I think it would be awesome if they did that. But just let me know so I can sell out before that happens.
You don't really present, for anybody who's met Brian, he doesn't present like an agent of chaos. I could tell you that from our... Does he have some of that aspect in him? Sure. Especially when you take him out of town. But on average, he doesn't present like an agent of chaos. So that's interesting. And I know that Dead Format and Leaving a Legacy just did their debate on whether or not the reserve list should be done away with. Go check them out. It's definitely worth your time. That special episode, I believe that was hosted by Dead Format. So you'll find that on there.
Yes, I definitely, I would recommend that one as well. I'm not 100% through it, but it's really solid. So go listen to that one after you're done listening to Try Hards and Buy Hards, of course.
Speaking of which, and this is Buy Hards, so we get to careen off into different avenues just at a moment's notice. Here's something I've been thinking about, and I don't have time to do this as well, but part of me wonders if the Magic podcasting community would be receptive to this. I had this idea the other day. We're traveling for the basketball team, and you get a lot of downtime on the bus when you go from Quincy, Illinois to Fayette, Iowa. What about a Reader's Digest version of a podcast recap? Like, if you listened to and clipped highlights from podcasts and had like the Reader's Digest, I'm so old, I'm saying the Reader's Digest version. There's a lot of people who have no idea what we're talking about right now. You just had like a best of the other podcasts of the week each week. That would be a lot of work to do. I think it would be interesting. But I think there might be some people that, especially in this day and age of like Patreon, where if you're taking their best 3 or 4 minutes, they might get a little upset about that. I think it would be an interesting, would you listen to something like that? Like a podcast digest? God.
As somebody whose time is not his own, most of my day, I would absolutely love that, because one of my favorite things to do is when Channel Fireball puts out like the top 5 Magic plays of the week. Mm-hmm. Someone's already combed, you know, the recesses of the internet and Twitch to kind of find those online plays, to find those on-camera plays. I think that's so great that I get to see what the top 5 plays are and to see what crazy things have gone on without kind of, oh, hey, I came across this one that's so nuts. Somebody's put them in there and ranked them for me, and then you get Riley Knight adding his own, you know, witty commentary to them. That's fantastic. If somebody would put together like highlights of the best of for the week on podcasts, oh, like a clearinghouse of Magic podcasts, mm-hmm, would be amazing. What I would advocate for is everybody who's in on this, all the podcasts who are kind of providing content to this, would maybe send their best clip. So it's like podcast chosen. It's not one person having to comb through and say that. It's like, hey, this is our little best clip. Here it is. That would be really sweet. And that would be a great marketing tool, don't you think, Sean, to kind of get, you know, give a little bit of flavor of, you know, Cartel Aristocrats and us and Monday Night Magic and, you know, all of those. I feel like there's so many different things going on that, hey, this one sounds like it would appeal to me. Maybe I'll take a deeper listen or pledge a dollar or whatever. I think that's a great idea.
Sure. Well, you could juxtapose things that people in specialty areas might not know about outside their specialty box. So you might have something, and they've got a huge Patreon following, and it's because they do a great job. You might have something from like Limited Resources and then something from Leaving a Legacy. So limited players get to hear something from a legacy group, and then you could have like the Turn One Thoughtseize guys, and you have all these different things. Now, yep. in a bygone era, you know, you wouldn't have been able to put any portion of the A-Team on there because it would just be all beeped out. But, you know, that had its own sort of je ne sais quoi, if you will, its own esprit de corps. But I got to thinking about it. I thought it would be interesting, but
that's actually a great idea. You should be the overlord of this project.
Yeah, I need something else to do. That's fantastic.
Well, you do. It just needs to pay you for it. So,
well, that's true. As I always say, I will thank anyone so long as it's their name on the check that I'm cashing. So those are the rules in those situations. There was something else I was going to ask you about, and now it just escapes me. But yeah, it's maybe we'll just think of it again a little bit later.
Thanks, Hurley. Thanks for throwing Sean off track with Byhard.
Yeah, exactly. It was important too. So the world may never know now. We're in like the darkest timeline now where I can't.
All right. I have something I wanted to bring back. This kind of circles back to our GP/Magic Fest conversation from earlier. Is there a deck, legacy deck, that you are looking forward to seeing in the GP, the double GP this coming weekend in Japan? Is there something that you've been waiting for somebody to maybe come out with, you know, the cotillion, as it were, the coming out party, mm-hmm. the quinceañera of so-and-so card or such-and-such deck, or something that you would love to see come to the forefront that you haven't seen for a while? Or are you looking for just some archetype to just completely annihilate everybody?
There's been a history of Asian players innovating in modern with fairies-style decks, and I think that there is an open door in Legacy to be able to do that. Because you look at some of the pieces that go into those decks and you see different ways to pressure different decks. Bitter Blossom is the first one that comes to mind. It's very hard for a Miracles deck to keep up with something that outputs a flying threat that grows exponentially as each turn goes by. Any deck that is going to be Delver-based is going to have a hard time racing that. Are you on your own clock? Yes, I understand that. But you're taking one to block a flip Delver and not three from that Delver. You can slow down the big zombie fish while you're putting other pieces in play. Fairies have this wonderful nexus, and by wonderful, I mean that as somebody who's played fairies, not played against fairies, of control, aggression, counter spells that are also creatures. It's almost possibly like a better, maybe merfolk deck. If you could work something in where you've got Cavern of Souls and your different fairies who do Spellstutter Sprite, if you're playing Bitter Blossom, is still absolutely a card. So I think there's something there, and I think that the Asian players may be the ones that kind of take that and explore whether it's good or not. I don't know if it's good or not, but that history of innovation has me a little bit excited for that. And then if you look at some of the things that have happened at some of the North American Legacy events lately, I know the Leaving a Legacy Open and some other things. They were smaller events, but you've had a little bit of a resurgence of goblins. And I think that's very interesting because you have a resilient beatdown deck that now, with Rabble Master and with War Boss, has an unbelievable clock that they can get to with eight different creatures on two different points on the mana curve. And this is a deck that plays Aether Vial and Cavern of Souls. With everybody getting a little bit greedy on their mana base and the threat of Miracles back to basicsing you, maybe there's room for a Goblins deck to get in that's just Mountains and Cavern of Souls, and then using Aether Vial to get around any kind of back to basics hate that it might encounter for its Cavern of Souls. Because both of those things make your creatures uncounterable. And when you're looking at things like Goblin Lackey loose in a format that no longer has an absolute wall in a 1-2 Deathrite Shaman, you can do some things. And I think that's a deck that the metagame may be sleeping on, depending on how some other things break. Am I like way off the deep end here? Hopefully you just didn't want me to say like Golgari Depths.
Because I would say Golgari deck. Depths is like a known quantity now. And
that's one of
those...
the big players. That's a pillar of the format now.
Oh, yeah, totally pillar of the format. I think the way that it's rolled forward in the last 6-8 months. I feel like Golgari depth is something that you have to like prepare for and watch out for and have a plan for when you play it. So no, that's the fairies angle, the goblins angle, especially. I think because of the banning of Deathrite Shaman, which is a deck that any deck Deathrite Shaman was in just seemed to eat goblins lunch. And so goblins has really been on the rise. And if you watch any Twitch streams, if you watch people doing Legacy, you'll find goblins as a constant on the other side of that. So yeah, that's definitely a deck that I think is going to be very interesting.
Okay, well, let me put the shoe on the other foot. You're a Miracles player. You've played it on and off, and you're more than competent with it. If I tell you you're on Miracles and I'm going to sit down and play Blue-Black Fairies, are you happy?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm not at all happy because it really does depend on the draw. I'm probably a dog game one just because of how many flash creatures you have, because of how many kind of the spell stutter sprite gives all kinds of counter problems with the permission spells of Miracles. I feel like that just causes so many different things. And you hit the nail on the head. The redundancy of Bitter Blossom, I think, is the trump card right there. Then to plan for that in the game 2 and 3, I don't know. I don't know how you'd sideboard for fairies.
Okay, so I'm on fairies. You played first. We both made our first 2 land drops.
Mm-hmm.
On turn 2, I play Bitter Blossom. Can you afford to get involved in a counterspell war over that Bitter Blossom? Is that so key that you have to use your resources, or can you use the one of Council's Judgment in your deck and try to find it in time for it to mean something, or do you have to go all in right there?
I think if you've got a spell pierce or a daze, you waste it, but I don't think you waste a force. Because I feel like with the Terminus package you've got, you can, you know, wipe their board. They're taking some incremental damage off the life loss there. That's how I would play it. And then bringing in disenchants out of the board, I think, is probably good.
Sure.
Something else that, probably a couple other creatures to kind of fight that battle. That's probably when you bring in your mentor package, I would think, because I feel like that you're kind of fighting redundancy with redundancy. That's how I would approach it, but I'd have to see the list and kind of, that would be a fun one for you and I to play for sure.
I think we might have talked ourselves
into
something
up Miracles
here.
And you sleeve up fairies. Oh my God, that'd be hilarious.
Well, and it's funny that you said the mentor package, because the Miracles decks that are running Accumulated Knowledge, they're getting closer and closer to like the Xerox style decks that just want to do the same cantripping over and over. So that actually makes the mentor plan, I think, that much better.
Oh, it does, especially with Accumulated Knowledge.
Yeah.
If you can draw 2-3 cards off one spell, and then Predict is a super strong card in that deck now. I think that just that coupled with, a lot of the other things that if you've got a mentor on the battlefield, backed up with a little bit of defensive permission, I think that's a really, really strong play.
So what decks are you looking forward to? I'll ask you the same question.
Oh, I'm really interested in seeing kind of how people are going to keep approaching the Grixis suite of decks, whether it be Grixis Delver or Grixis Control. I know that we had a Grixis Delver deck take down the Eternal Weekend. I think that's just a list that can always be tinkered with a little bit. It seems that Zombie Fish is a card that is kind of a trump in the format right now. It can just take care of so many different things against Rug Delver. It can take care of things against Miracles. If they can't find a way to get rid of it, if you can get it down early, you get an early counter war and then they lay in Zombie Fish. If you can't find a Terminus, you're on maybe a 3-turn clock at that point, depending on how much they fetched. That can be a big, big trump card. So I'm curious to see how that comes out, because I'm sure we'll see some Grixis in the field, obviously. The one deck that I watched maybe mid-October, I tend to run and watch Andrea Mengucci stream on Channel Fireball, and he did the experimental Frenzy Storm, which was kind of like a almost mono red storm list using experimental frenzy out of Guild of Ravnica.
I remember you talking about this.
And oh God, that deck was just absolutely bonkers. I mean, it used all the rituals, the Moxes, and then Past in Flames. And when you've got experimental frenzy going to play off the top of the deck, I felt like that was such a strong thing. I'm wondering if people have the courage to sleeve up something like that, because I feel like it's just a step faster than traditional Storm, either Tess or Ant. Help me out.
Ant.
Thanks. Tess or Ant. And so if someone's going to sleeve this up, they just might have, they might be able to steal some games. Obviously, being able to brainstorm, being able to ponder in a traditional Storm deck is still extremely strong. But that Experimental Frenzy can give you, a turn one, turn two kill a lot of the time. So that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm also wondering if the continuation of the Stoneblade deck from, circa 2004 is going to continue its resurgence. Are we going to see a bunch of Stoneblades, see a bunch of Batterskulls on the battlefield, Stoneforge Mystics tapping to put some equipment onto the battlefields, that kind of stuff? A Nahiri Lithomancer, for God's sakes, out of Joe Lissette, is that going to be something that is going to catch on? I love the Stoneblade decks because I feel like that's like right in my wheelhouse when I was really kind of like my heart of Legacy, so to speak. So that's always a concern, not a concern, that's always a curiosity of mine to see how well they're going to do and if anybody's going to have any innovations going forward.
Should be a lot of fun to watch Shishin Zuoka this weekend, whether for the wide open standard format that we've got right now, as far as some tech going on, and then Legacy, of course, always giving itself over to innovation. Should be fun to watch this weekend. This is By Hards. Hey, Brian, you want to have some fun and troll Matt while he's not here?
Oh, do I?
Okay, let's do Matt's job for him. Normally, he does on Tryhards and in the elevator pick and gives, like, financial advice. Let's each pick a card that we think is going to, like, get hot coming up. Because this will just irritate him to no end. Hopefully, it'll be, like, the two cards he was thinking about picking coming up.
If he picks one of these two cards, don't you think that he's going to have to owe you something or owe me something? Because I feel like that's just like reading Matt's mind, which is something I never want to do. Right. It's like the Palantir from, Lord of the Rings. Yes. Like, you just don't want to go there.
I think if before the end of the year he picks one of these two cards, he has to get us a foil version of the card.
Oh, sweet. That's awesome. Love
okay.
It.
Okay. Since I just sprung this on you, I thought about this for a little bit. I'll go first, and then you can think of one too. One card that I've been messing around with playing is Remorseful Cleric. This is a standard pick. It is one and a white for a 2/1 flyer. Sacrifice Remorseful Cleric, exile target player's graveyard. With all of the graveyard shenanigans that are starting to pop up in standard, really the Boros deck is the only one that doesn't use it. Any of your blue control decks want to use Search for Iskanta to get flipped? You have the Golgari decks that are constantly cycling in and cycling out. You even have some of the Grixis decks, even though they've been pushed to the sideline a bit, tier 1.5, tier 2, with Bolas and Eldest Reborn looking to go to the graveyard for value. I think this is, in Remorseful Cleric, a creature that the White Weenie or Boros decks can use to stay aggressive. Again, it's a 2/1 evasive creature for 2 that has upside in matches where you need it. I'm not saying main deck. This, to me, could be a huge sideboard impact card. It gives you that sort of right when you need it, rest in peace. And that could be big, I think, in the standard format right now. So if I'm getting on a card that I'm looking at for potential upside, these are like a buck and a half right now. Remorseful Cleric is one that I've got my eye on. So there you go, Matt.
Sweet.
I helped you out. Brian, you got some advice?
I would say that there's a card that I've always been impressed with, especially in the Izzet Drakes and in some of the Jeskai builds, that has seen a ton of play, and that's Chemister's Insight. Mm-hmm. The draw 2 cards at instant speed, even though it costs 4, but the fact that it has Jumpstart, I feel like, is so strong. And as this continues on into the next standard format, when we, kind of turn the calendar over, that might be something that maybe wanes a tad, but I think it's going to jumpstart itself right back up there. So let's see if Remorseful Cleric, Chemister's Insight, is something that he's going to pop on. He, though, he's going to pick something like Scarwood Bandits out of the dark.
I saw that on the hot list the other day. I was like, what are we doing?
What? Who is buying these in more than quantity one? So, yeah.
Scarwood Bandits. There you go, kids. Those are the kind of creatures that we had to battle with when we started playing Magic. Scarwood Bandits. That's right. What was it that I always got excited about? Ooh, Urg Raiders. Way OP. One and a black for a 2/3. The only drawback was it had to attack every turn or it like did two damage to you.
You know what? When that thing started hitting and you had nothing to block it, or it just kept taking out things that you threw in front of it, that thing was a house. Urg Raiders was a house.
Urg Raiders, OP. I get that. that's what people say now. All right. This is Byhards. Matt wasn't here. Sean and Brian just hanging out with you. Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up? Because I think that's probably going to be it. It's time for us to walk back to the mini fridge and get something
else.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. Me to get out of my, you know, to actually put on my pull-ups on the Arena League. The one thing I was going to say is I haven't done this formally yet. Happy late Thanksgiving. How was your turkey day?
Oh, it was great. I think did we talk about this in the pre-show? I think we did. Or did we talk about it now? It's been a while.
Well, I knew you went to the bar and had Bloody Mary, but I'm curious, like the family time, the food, what did you make? Did you have any political discussions that were totally awkward?
No, the group knows not to get involved with me on that. and secondly, yes, I had my my favorite side dish, which the girlfriend's mom makes her own noodles from scratch. And so she makes the noodles, then makes the gravy from scratch. And whew, man, that's just like I get some turkey to be nice. Get some mashed potatoes. That's fine.
So you have that with the meal. That's your meal then.
Oh yeah.
See, our tradition here is Megan makes the noodles the day after in the morning, lets them dry out all day, and then we always have turkey and noodles the day after Thanksgiving with the carcass from the turkey. So I'm feeling you there. It's delicious.
Those noodles are fantastic. And then this is a group that knows their way around the dessert tray. We'll just put it that way. So there was some red velvet cake that's a favorite of mine, along with some more traditional offerings, pumpkin pie, apple pie, cheesecake. You might be saying cheesecake. Well, my mom once looked into starting her own cheesecake delivery service. So I've long grown up on cheesecake. And Brian knows this. He's had plenty of cheesecake at my house growing up. I am a very harsh judge on cheesecake, I will tell you that. And I gave it a on what we had over there. It's cheesecake. You know, it's kind of like playing Magic. Like, yeah, I mean, it's modern, but I mean, at least we're still playing Magic.
So it was a cooked, I mean, someone made it. They didn't just pull it out of the freezer box thing, did they? Or order it from like the fundraising, you know, kids thing? Because those are terrible.
No comment.
Oh, foul right there. Okay, I must say, I enjoyed our dinner immensely. We hung out here. Good friends of ours, Matt and Melinda and their kids, came over to the in-laws, and we had a great day. I will say, though, that the dessert offerings were a little light this year, which I'm always used to like 5, 6, 7 pies and having like a sampler platter. You know how you buy those cheesecakes, speaking of cheesecake, where it's you get like 10 slices
and they're like each. It's like two of each kind.
Well, that's what my dessert plate looks like at Thanksgiving, because I just have a little sliver of pumpkin, a little sliver of pecan, a little sliver of apple, and then I go back for seconds, of course, later. But we only had two pies, one that I made, which was my famous honey ginger pumpkin, which is phenomenal, and then our friends made an apple pie. But there was no pecan pie this year, and I'm feeling a little bit of a hole in my heart. And I still don't know how to rectify that. So overall, phenomenal day. Great to see the family. Megan was in town, obviously. Haven't seen her in a hot minute. So it was great, but still feeling like I need some more dessert. So anybody out there want to ship me a pecan pie? I'll give you my address. Just, you know, hit me up at. Yeah, just hit me up.
Let me tell you, he's serious. If you're going to look into this, he is serious. He will let you ship him a pecan pie, and he'll eat it in one sitting too, if there's no one there to stop him.
please be there, someone there to stop me, because, boy, that'll be like a day off work just recovering. But it would be delicious, and I would be happy to report back.
And when he's done, he might even order a medium sausage pizza on his way out the door.
No comment.
Speaking of getting out the door, we should probably do that. This has been ByHards. Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for hanging out with us. Matt was under the weather this week, just Brian and Sean hanging out. We'll get Matt back next week. He'll give you the lowdown on everything that he's working on heading into the SCG Invitational. We've got Shinzuoka to go over. Should be a lot of fun. We'll see you then.